We begin today with the idea of due diligence. While markets rupture and fluctuate lately in the noisy wind of financial whims, we have a story for you of the difficulty of understanding an investment, any investment. Is it what it says it is? What is its impact on the people close to where your money may be going? This is a tale about the challenge of trust and verification of investments. We could have chosen many places in the world and many companies, but this hour we choose Brazil, which got some very good news a few years back.
Rio de Janeiro.
Rio de Janeiro!
The announcement of the Rio Olympics in 2009 heralded new investment interest in a nation known for political unrest, a booming economy, and a democracy still in the shadow of Brazil's history of military rule. Just like the World Cup tournament in Brazil in 2014, investors will see more of the nation than ever before. For U.S. audiences more interested in the Olympics than in the World Cup, the light will be on. Will the streets be swept of refuse? Polluted rivers and bays be detoxed? Will we see Brazil's environment under stress because of mining and development in the fragile Amazon and elsewhere? What will we see? More important, what will investors see? In the Amazon, there is good environmental news, but in the vast farmlands developed in the past 50 years, more question marks. Gustavo Oliveira is a doctoral candidate at the University of California, Berkeley, who studies Brazilian farmland development.
We've seen a very positive development of both Brazilian and international attention to the Amazon. The downside of that has been the absolute sacrifice of the Cerrado and other ecosystems in Brazil, especially the Cerrado, because that is the largest ecosystem where agribusiness has been expanding. During these last 30 years, Brazil surpassed the United States to become the leading exporter of soy. This has been associated with widespread deforestation and other type of environmental degradation in the Cerrado.
You can see a map of deforestation in this Cerrado region since 2010 on our website. Whose money does that represent? It turns out there are billions of U.S. pension dollars invested in Brazilian farmland. And one of the biggest players is the New York-based firm TIAA CREF, a company with a white-glove reputation for environmentally and politically responsible investment strategies. Here is Jose Minaya, company senior executive, explaining on a conference call how Brazil is a real gold mine for farmland investment.
They have a lot of water in Brazil, and it rains at the right time. You get the right solar radiation. You get the ability of producing, in many cases, twice the crops that you can on a similar farm in the U.S., for example.
That was an investment call made back in August of 2015. As senior managing director and head of private markets asset management at TIAA CREF, he has an impact on the pensions of millions of Americans and more American teachers than any other institution in the world. Public radio employees have accounts with TIAA CREF, including me. They are a sponsor of this program. Are those investments in Brazil responsible? How can we find out? Is it knowable? A recent report from Grain, an international organization that supports local farms and local land ownership, found the company bypassed a 2010 law, which banned large-scale land purchases by foreign companies. You may have seen a report last November in the New York Times. Since the announcement of the Olympics and since Brazilian law changed, TIAA CREF has itself reported that its acreage there has more than doubled. 257,877 acres held in 2012 jumped to 633,391 acres by the start of 2015. The report from Grain also alleges some of that land was purchased from sources with a criminal background who are accused of stealing it from poor farmers before selling it to TIAA CREF and others. Devlin Kuyek, one of the lead researchers on the Grain report, says this type of acquisition is illegal, and the fact that it's through unscrupulous landholders is in direct contradiction with TIAA CREF's white-glove reputation.
It's really happened over the last two decades. Brazil has become a major exporter of soybeans and other commodities, particularly to China. Then also it's become a target for financial investors who are looking to acquire farmland as an asset. They see it as this sort of hedge that they can place against things like the stock market. And so since the financial crisis of 2008, you've had a lot of big actors from the financial industry who've been looking to acquire farmland, and Brazil is one of their main targets.
It appears from TIAA CREF disclosures that the Brazilian holdings of the company have jumped from 257,000 acres in 2012 to more than 633,000 acres at the start of last year. I mean, that's a huge investment.
And yes, I think it's shocking for a lot of people once they see these numbers. TIAA CREF manages these global farmland funds on behalf of other pension fund managers as well, and has really been a main actor in trying to push this forward as a sort of safe and responsible investment. And those land holdings pretty much doubled over those years at a time when Brazil was becoming exceedingly worried about this sort of inflow of foreign investment and acquisitions of the country's farmland, and had revised its legislation to put limits on what foreigners can acquire in terms of farmland in Brazil. And there's no way that this should have been able to happen under that law.
So you believe, and others in Brazil believe, that this company has violated Brazilian law in making these huge acquisitions?
Yeah, it created a complex structure and these sort of vehicles to skirt around the legislation. So, you know, the company would argue, well, there's nothing illegal about what we did, but it's clearly a violation of the spirit of the law. And the only reason for this complex, opaque company structure that they created was to have a vehicle that could get around the law and allow for TIAA CREF to acquire farmland. And this area where TIAA CREF has been focusing in its investments over the last few years especially, this is an area where indigenous people, small-scale farmers, tend to be situated and where they've occupied the land for generations. And in ways that, you know, the title is usually not clear. A lot of these lands are public lands. But these are areas where you have these sort of mafia-type figures who have been using violence, using fraud to claim those lands as their own in order to sell them to these foreign investors who are interested in acquiring those lands. So you have almost like an outsourcing of land grabbing to these local thugs.
Is there any way to know the level of displacement of indigenous peoples as a result of these acquisitions? And would you say that TIAA CREF is a pioneer in this kind of investment and this kind of agricultural development?
These are pretty remote areas, and our colleagues from Brazil who were in that area were able to witness firsthand how entire areas of savanna where people had used for grazing their animals, the forests where people had used for hunting and gathering medicines, the major water sources for the areas, all those have been taken over by TIAA CREF's sort of subsidiaries. And it's not just TIAA CREF, but TIAA CREF is such a powerful actor. I mean, it manages hundreds of billions of dollars. It has two farmland funds that combined manage $5 billion.
What would the teachers who are pension holders at TIAA CREF, and TIAA CREF is a huge pension holder for public radio employees. They're a supporter of public radio programs. They certainly position themselves as a particular kind of brand. Do you believe that this would come as a surprise to people who hold TIAA CREF pensions?
Well, of course it would, because TIAA CREF is always talking about how responsible an investor it is, saying, you know, we practice strict due diligence. Don't worry, we ensure that the rights of indigenous communities are respected. We abide by the law. And yet, you know, the person that they're buying the land off in this area of Brazil is a well-known land grabber who's facing a number of investigations, who's been labeled by one of the local lawmakers as a murderer charged with assassination of at least two people. You know, if you're an investor in TIAA CREF, if you're a pension holder in one of the funds that they manage, I think it's really important to write to them, to express your concern, and to demand that they at least, at a minimum, make public the farms that they hold. Because, you know, the difference between what they're saying and what we found when we actually knew where those farms were, it was completely contradictory.
Devlin Kuyak is a researcher at Grain, an international organization that supports local land ownership around the world. Thank you so much, Devlin.
Thank you, John.
TIAA CREF company maps confirm they own land from Brazil's far east to the south. Some of that land is indeed in the savanna known as the Cerrado, one of the country's beautiful and vast natural ecosystems. Until now, TIAA CREF has not publicly responded to these allegations of questionable investments in Brazil, though they spoke with our partner, the New York Times, off the record, and have been quietly responding to investor worries about what TIAA CREF might be doing. Jose Minaya decided to respond to The Takeaway directly. Again, he's head of private markets asset management at TIAA CREF and claims 8% returns from these Brazilian investments. We asked him many questions. Are his company's land purchases in Brazil legal? Have they purchased land from people who got it by force, committing crimes to obtain land titles?
Less than 1% of holdings are owned by institutions like a TI CREF. So it's significant. It's growing. It merits the question of what are these investors doing? Where are they? I think we like to take a leadership position in trying to educate and have that transparency. In terms of not being in compliance with the law, we are very thoughtful in how we create our structures. We believe and know that we're in compliance with the law. And we're transparent about what we do in Brazil. From a title perspective, our standards are very focused around not displacing individuals or indigenous people, respecting land rights as well as human rights. In our title search, we go back multiple owners to go back and see where really the origination of when that land was transferred. We go back and with the properties that we own, we check to make sure that they were converted. Even if it was converted 20, 30 years ago, we have the ability to know whether that was converted legally. We can also use intellectual property and satellite technology to go back and know exactly what was growing on those properties. The Cerrado is a very large region. Yes, I could sit here and say, look, we have a very small percentage of our portfolio in that region. But I think what's more important to say is you can make a statement that says the Cerrado has had a history in the past of some of these things going on. TI CREF is invested in the Cerrado. But again, in those areas, we're also going to places where we've put this standard process in place. We believe it holds up to our ethical standards. And again, these are areas that have been commercially viable because if they're not, it wouldn't meet our criteria.
Can you respond to the specific allegation that you're working with an individual who's been accused of murder, who is a famous, ruthless land grabber in the region and has run afoul of the Brazilian authorities many times?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, our process is based on fact. It's not based on social media or rumor. But these are serious accusations. We take them serious. And in every property that we have acquired, we don't just do due diligence on that property. We do due diligence on the sellers, whether it's an individual or whether it's an entity. Now, the overwhelming majority of the people who we buy land from are actual farmers who stay on the land. But across the board, we do this. And when accusations come up, of course, we go back, make sure we didn't miss anything here. And today, I could say we stand behind our current properties, operations, and what we've done in the region to date.
Are you prepared for the attention that Brazil is going to get leading up to the Olympics, including the kind of investments that you have in Brazil, and that just as, you know, Nike and fashion companies don't necessarily understand exactly how every sneaker is made and every T-shirt is sewn, that it may be difficult for you to verify all the statements that you've traditionally been very comfortable with?
No, I think that's a good point. And we knew this going in. We've seen this before in terms of the concerns around a World Cup in Brazil. And of course, we're not just reacting to public sentiment. We've been dealing with these questions all along. It's the same questions that came up for some time before we made our first investment. And we have a conviction in not just Brazil in certain regions. We have a conviction in this asset class. And as we said earlier, I think more of these questions, as these things bubble up, that it's good for the asset class because it improves transparency and maybe removes some biases and informs the broader community better.
Because you treat these accusations so urgently, it occurs to me that, I mean, this is the first moment you've responded as a corporation mm-hmm. to these allegations. Why did you wait so long? The article came out in November. If you were absolutely convinced that you were comfortable being, first of all, outed by the New York Times and then comfortable defending your practices.
Mm-hmm. No, that's correct. And as I've said before, before we even made our first investment, we knew about these challenges in these markets and wanted to felt very comfortable. We had a thoughtful process, developed responsible principles for investing. We continue to improve that process. When we get an accusation like this, we're still informed by it. And like I said, we take it serious. So we then go through and validate and confirm and go in and make sure that what we believe to be true is in fact still happening. Even though we do this on a continual basis, it informs us to go in and make sure that we didn't miss something. And I think as it relates to our portfolio today, our properties in Brazil or anywhere else, we continue to stand behind the integrity of the activities behind those operations.
Does that mean you personally know who's running the operation down there? What's your stake in the holding company down there? It's something like 70, 80%?
We have a legal structure set up in Brazil today. We set up many different structures around the globe. We're very thoughtful in doing it because we know we have a fiduciary duty to do so. And our goal with our structure in Brazil is to be legally compliant and in touch with the local community because it's a very local asset class. We're transparent, so you can go to our website. You can pull and see that we are, in fact, investing in Brazil. You could see that we're increasing our ability to invest there as well.
Do you have an average of how many years the hectares or acreages that you're involved in have been cultivated? You said 30 years, but that's just some, just in terms of Brazil.
So in terms of Brazil, most of our holdings in Brazil are in the Sao Paulo region. And that's a region that's been in production well north of 80 years, just a very long period of time.
Well, that's a region. That's a little imprecise. Do you know in terms of your own particular holdings?
So I'd say, you know, if Brazil is approximately 20% of our exposure, 80% of that is in a region like São Paulo, where they've been in production well over 80 years. A smaller percentage is in the Cerrado region, which is on average been north of 15 to 20 years in production. You have some farms that we have that have been in production for 30, 40 years. That would say that's a good mix of it. You have some that have been as short as 10 years.
Nothing below 10?
I'd have to kind of think through it. There might be one or two farms that maybe were in production for 4 years. But the key there is these are not new regions. You can't look at it with a view of, oh, we just started developing this area 4 years ago. It's more expansion from where you've been existing at, you know, tangential or adjacent kind of lots. Not that we are going to new areas because we really don't have the ability to do that. We don't have the ability to go in and say there is a robust base of lessees here that can mitigate our risk. We don't have the ability to kind of get the return profile that we want, which is immediate income for our portfolio. So we are already delegated in order through our guidelines in the mandate that we have to go to these regions that are already predominantly developed.
In an era of 1% T-bill interest rates, what returns do you expect to get from these investments?
In a historical context, we typically point to the NCREIF Farmland Index, which has been between an 8 to 12% return. Half of that is coming from capital appreciation. Half of that is coming from current income. That's what we've observed today in our farmland portfolio.
I'm a account holder at TIAA-CREF.
Thank you.
A lot of my colleagues are, and you're a contributor to public broadcasting and to public radio. With that said, isn't there a tension? I mean, who do you report to? I mean, I want the highest return on my account. Maybe I don't care about what's going on down in Brazil. But if there's some farmer who you say is of more concern than my money, how are you going to resolve that?
I think this is in this particular asset class, there is a balance here. But the reality is our goal is an economic one, right? We are trying to provide for the retirement needs through the lifetime of our clients. We've made the evaluation of this asset class of if we invest in these areas, if you invest with this operating structures that we have in place, we can deliver that need and feel confident that we can. At the same time, we are a long-term driven investor. This is not a strategy where you're getting really outsized returns. So it takes a longer time to get your money back, but you do it with the right stability. So that means that having the right environmental, social, and governance practices around assets like this are directly tied to our investment thesis for investing in those regions and in farmland in general.
So it's not one or the other?
With this asset class, it really cannot be one or the other because if I buy land and I expect to get my capital back at some point 20, 30 years from now, I need to maintain the integrity of that asset.
I've observed you listening to Kuyak and his accusations, and my impression is that your response, aside from the specifics that you said, is bring them on.
We stand behind and we have to stand behind our process, right? This is something that, you know, we had a very thoughtful approach before we ever entered the asset class. And we understand that we're going to be held to a higher scrutiny by our stakeholders, our clients, and the community at large because of what we represent and who we represent. And I could tell you we're very confident in what we're doing in Brazil today.
Jose Minaya is Senior Managing Director and Head of Private Markets Asset Management at TIAA CREF. Jose, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
There you have it. Are the investments responsible or not? Minaya makes a convincing case for the company, but Brazilian and UC Berkeley doctoral candidate Gustavo Oliveira says all the documentation in the world going back decades can't erase the fact that this is Brazil, not the neatly geometric cornfields of Iowa.
You might have someone that had a title for 5 hectares, and then 30 years ago, this person makes a quote-unquote transfer to someone else, and the title gets rewritten as 5,000 hectares. We have some states where if you add up the total area of all the titles granted in that state, that area is not just larger than the physical area of the state. Sometimes it's twice as large.
If you add up all the titles that are on the books, it actually represents double the land. So clearly there's something wrong here.
Yes, you might be able to point to a title that goes back 30 years ago, but that on its own doesn't demonstrate that the establishment of that title 30 years ago was legal in the first place.
Farmland is just one of the investment classes that will be open to greater scrutiny as the Olympics shines a light on where the billions in foreign investment is coming from and where it is going. These are tough times politically and economically for Brazil, and we'll be watching to see what else the light reveals.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.